everyone, welcome to episode 21 of Specialis Revelio Podcast. I'm Christine Granger.
And I'm Melissa Weasley.
This is our last episode before LeakyCon in Deathly Hallows Part 2. Yay!
Yay!
In a short 6 days from this recording, we will be packing our bags and flying out to sunny Orlando, Florida for the LeakyCon festivities to celebrate the closing of the Harry Potter movie series and more. I don't know what day you're leaving, Melissa, but I'm leaving on Tuesday, I think around 12:30.
Yeah, I'm leaving a few hours before that, Tuesday at 9.
Okay, all right. Yeah, me and Sam are leaving at 12:30, so... in addition to our normal programming, we'll dedicate an additional segment to our Deathly Hallows 2 most anticipated moments. So let's start with some news first. Birthdays this week are Ryan Turner, who plays Hugo Weasley in the upcoming Deathly Hallows Part 2, whose birthday was on the 4th, and David O'Hara, who played Albert Runcorn in Deathly Hallows Part 1, his birthday is on the 9th. And on the 10th, Fiona Shaw, who plays Petunia Dursley, will celebrate her birthday. So happy birthday to those three. The Harry Potter World Cup is really heating up now. As contestants have dropped out, we're now pitting our favorite characters against our favorite characters. Harry Potter versus Neville Longbottom, Ron Weasley versus Fred Weasley, Albus Dumbledore versus Remus Lupin. I've been very surprised by the results. As of today, we're down to the Elite Eight. The competition is almost over, and on July 11th, we'll have our two finalists. Melissa, who do you think they'll be? Do you have any idea?
I don't know who both of them are going to be. I do think one of them, I believe, is going to be Dumbledore. I think one of them will be Dumbledore, definitely.
Yeah. I think one of them will... I thought about it. But actually, one of the results was when they pit Remus Lupin against Dumbledore, Remus Lupin actually came out the winner against Dumbledore.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was really surprised. And it wasn't super-duper close, either. It was by a couple percentage points, I think.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised.
I didn't read the results for this last one. I did vote, but I didn't read the results. And when I voted, I was also surprised that... Ron Weasley and Fred Weasley, is it Fred or George?
Fred.
I always get them too mixed up.
I know.
So Fred and Ron are going neck and neck, and I was actually surprised because Ron is, you know, one of the trio, and he's, like, a lot of people's favorite characters is mine. But, they're, like, neck and neck. Like, when I voted, they were... like 0.3% away from each other.
Yeah.
And I was like,
wow. I think Ron pulled out ahead in that one. I can't be sure. I checked the results this morning, but same with Harry and Neville. I think Harry pulled out ahead.
Yeah, I think they've been helping themselves along on Twitter.
Yes, definitely.
I saw the Phelps brothers were tweeting for people to vote for them, and Neville was also Matthew was also.
Yeah, Matt Lewis. Yeah he was well. Mm-hmm, I saw that. Yeah, so I was thinking maybe one of them would be Harry Potter, because, you know, it's Harry Potter, the boy who lived. But you never know. As of how the results have been going, you never really know how it's going to turn out. So we'll find out the two finalists on July 11th. So that'll be next Monday. Let's see, in other news, the London press conference was today, and most fan sites had live coverage of the event on their pages. You could tune in and ask questions, and they were transcribing everything into a chat box so you could read everything that was going on. Not as good as audio, of course, but at least we got live, up-to-date responses to questions and everything. I actually posted a copy of the transcript on our website in a blog post if anyone wants to check that out. It was kind of long, so I made a separate page and linked to it. So that was pretty interesting. They had some pretty good questions and answers on that. And one of them I remember was, what's your favorite line? And all the actors that were there, they told their favorite line from the series. So that was pretty cool. Lots of new footage, clips, and behind-the-scenes and B-roll footage have been released and posted on our website as well. I do want to make the announcement that it is there on the website, but that we won't be discussing it on the show, just because I know, well, Sam, who's not here, is done watching anything new related to the movie, and I am as well. I don't know about you, Melissa, but...
Oh, I'm so far done. Yeah. I read somewhere that there was a leak about one of my most awaited moment in the film, that there was a leak on that.
Oh, no.
And then it somehow got on around on the internet, and I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I do not want that moment spoiled, and I'm not watching anything else.
Yeah, I don't want to see any more new footage. I will, however, be posting whatever comes up for those of you that do want to see it. But, yeah, I haven't been actually watching any of the videos. I just, you know, get the link and post them. We'll be doing plenty of discussing next week when the actual whole movie comes out, so we'll definitely leave it for that. I also wanted to mention that J.K. Rowling has a video interview out as of this morning, I think, and she tells a lot about Deathly Hallows films and her thoughts on both parts of the movies. Did you get a chance to watch that yet?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know that was out. I'm going to have to... watch that.
Yeah, I believe I posted it on the website, and I think I might have posted it in the Facebook group as well, linked it to the Facebook group. Yeah, she talks about her feelings on both Deathly Hallows films, and basically she kind of gives her stamp of approval to the last film, and I think it's nice to have her approval before going in to watch it. It kind of makes me less nervous that they will have done something to kind of shame the books. So I definitely recommend watching that video from J.K. Rowling. It's on our website and also in our Facebook group. There's some other interviews on the website as well with Rupert Grint, James Phelps, and Tom Felton. So check those out as well. We'll be leaving for LeakyCon, like I said, Tuesday, July 12th, less than a week away. The next podcast you'll be hearing from us will be our Deathly Hallows review show straight from Orlando, Florida. Due to how busy we all are, we're going to be skipping Potter's Trivia next week, and we'll be continuing with episode 23 when we're all back from our trip and settled in. We will, however, be mentioning the winner from this week, just not giving out another question until we're back. That's about all I have for news this week. Is there anything you wanted to mention, Melissa?
Yes, but not a huge long explanation. The premiere in London for Deathly Hallows Part 2 is tomorrow. I've been reading everybody is excited about it on Twitter, and so I just thought I'd throw that out there. It's tomorrow.
Yeah, that's why they have the press conference today. Everybody was getting excited about it, yeah, for the premiere. I forgot to mention that. Okay, yep, thanks. So... last week, we left off with Ron and Harry packing their things for Hogwarts, and Ron getting angry after finding his dress robes, that everything he owns is hand-me-downs, and pretty much bummed out that he's poor. And we had Harry saying that he would share all of his money with the Weasleys, but he knows that they would never take it from him. So that leads us into Chapter 11. So Melissa, if you could start us off with that.
Chapter 11 is... called Aboard the Hogwarts Express. The chapter opens with everybody getting up early in the morning and getting ready to go get on the Hogwarts train. And Arthur is up and awake, and he gets an urgent message from the ministry. We find out that this is urgent message is coming from Amos Diggory, and his head is actually coming out of the fire, which is kind of nifty. It's kind of like flu powder, only it's only his head. It's weird.
You know, that's how, isn't this kind of how, you know how they have it in the movie, how Sirius puts his head out of the fire? Is
yeah.
that how it's supposed to be?
I think it is.
Because it's kind of different. They describe it, I think they describe it different. And I thought it would kind of be the same thing, because Sirius is actually, his head is the fire, like, it's, his head is made out of the embers and stuff in the movie. But, like, how they describe Amos Diggory, I feel like his head is just kind of, like, it is his head. I don't feel like his head is the fire or anything. I feel like it's like he grabbed some flu powder and, like, stuck his head in, and his head was transported into their fireplace. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly how they described it. They described it as his head looking like an egg in a nest.
Yeah.
Which would be like his head is the egg and you know, the fire is the nest. They're two completely different things. It's not like his head and the fire are meshed into one somehow.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think they screwed that up in the films.
That's what I thought.
they did it twice with Sirius. The second one, I was impressed with the special effects of it. I felt like it was different from the books, but I wasn't really angry about it because I was impressed with the special effects. The first one, I was like, what is that? It was just like the flame, and then like his face was transparent in front of the flame, kind of.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I screwed it up.
Yeah, I didn't really like either one of them. I was hoping they would kind of do it like the book, because that's how I pictured it, you know. And I don't know, I wasn't really a fan of the one with his face as the embers and stuff, because it was kind of neat how it moved and stuff with, you know, all the embers and the wood and stuff moved as his face, and it kind of popped up, but I don't know, it kind of let me down.
Yeah, I didn't like the way he acted it out. Like,
oh yeah, that too. I think that
he had this scratchy voice and he had to talk like this.
Yeah,
and
I think he was he was trying to be really quiet, you know, because they were trying not to be heard, but at the same time it just didn't really work out, and that added to it, and yeah, not a fan. I was waiting for this moment so that we could go back and find out how it was supposed to be done with Amos Diggory when they did that, so.
Right.
I've kind of been waiting for this to be mentioned.
Yep, that's how it's supposed to be done. It's supposed to be his head among the flames, but not as the flames,
right,
kind of thing.
Interesting.
So he comes with this urgent message, and the urgent message happens to be about Mad-Eye Moody, and it says he's causing a ruckus, making a lot of noise, and he says that nearby muggles called the policemen, except for he doesn't call them policemen, he calls them pleasemen.
Yeah, pleasemen.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cute.
That is cute.
And I guess they called Mr. Weasley because they kind of want him to clear Mad-Eye's name. I guess that's what I got the impression of. They didn't want Mad-Eye to get into too much trouble. And I guess I got the impression from reading it that he did this a lot. He freaks out when he thinks there's an intruder and goes berserko and shoots his wand off and causes a huge ruckus, and he does it often.
Yeah, it's usually a false alarm, right?
Yeah, and it's usually a false alarm, so Mad-Eye is
paranoid.
Paranoid. The boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mr. Weasley gets dressed and leaves and hopes he can help Mad-Eye and not get him into too much trouble. And I think it's funny because before Amos takes his head out of the flame, as we talked about earlier, Miss Weasley insists that he has toast before he goes and chucks a piece of toast. And it said that she chucked it into the fire. So apparently, like, it is connected to... It's not just, like, a manipulation of his face, like a video or something.
Right. It takes stuff with him, right? It's actually
right.
His face.
Right, he can
face.
Take stuff. Yes, it's actually his face. He can take stuff with him, and he's actually eating. So that's where I got that impression from.
Yeah. Interesting.
So Harry starts asking about who Mad-Eye is, and Charlie is actually the one who explains it. He's an R, and a dark wizard catcher is what Charlie explains it as. He says that he's the best one there is, and that half of the cells in Azkaban are filled because of Mad-Eye Moody. So we get a little background information there. And then Miss Weasley decides to take all the kids to the train station, and they had to rent 3 taxis because the ministry wouldn't lend them a car. And I guess the taxi driver was not happy with their owls and all that they were shoving in these taxis. So the kids arrive at the train station, and they're getting ready to leave, and Charlie mysteriously says, "I might be seeing you sooner than you think," and then he refuses to say any more. So you get more mysterious, which is funny because Percy's been trying this entire time to get them to ask questions.
Right.
And Ron's just like, "Whatever, I'm not asking any questions, you're a prat." But when Charlie says it, all of a sudden everybody's like, "What are you talking about?"
Exactly.
So, yeah, and then Bill says something too, and he says that he wishes he was going to be at Hogwarts this year, and that it's going to be an interesting year. And all of a sudden, everybody again is like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah. Same with Mr. Weasley back at the World Cup. I think he mentioned something as well, didn't he? And then everybody got interested.
Yep. Oh, and Ludo Bagman also mentions it.
Oh, okay.
And during the World Cup, yes, which I'll get to that in a second. So Ron, Harry, and Hermione have no idea what's going on. No one will tell them, but they all insist on talking about it in front of them, but not telling them. It's a little bit annoying, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely.
So they all say their goodbyes, and they head onto the train. Ron, Harry, and Hermione find their compartment, and this is where Harry mentions that Ludo Bagman was actually going to tell them what all this was about, but I believe it was, I don't have this in my notes, but I believe it was Crouch that stopped him and was like, "Oh no, that's classified."
Oh, probably.
Someone stopped him. He was like, "Oh, they'll find out soon enough," and he was going to tell them, but someone stopped him.
So
they don't know what's going on still. And then all of a sudden, Hermione says, "Shh." And she starts eavesdropping, which is totally, I thought that was out of character for her.
For Hermione, yeah.
Yeah. But she can hear Draco's voice coming from the next compartment, and the doors open. And then we hear Draco, and Draco's talking about how he wanted to go to Durmstrang, and he almost was sent, but his mother thought it was too far away. And he said that he wanted to go there because their headmaster wasn't a mudblood lover.
Classic Draco.
Yeah. And he also mentions, which I don't know if this is true or not, but I really would like to know. He mentions that at Durmstrang, the students not just learn how to fend against the dark arts, they actually learn the dark arts.
Yeah, I've heard that. I did read that. I don't know if it was right there or if they mention it somewhere else, but I think Crumb mentions it later too.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but I'm going to make a note to remember that because, you know, at Hogwarts, they throw a fit when Moody is showing them. He's not teaching them how to do it. He's just showing them what it looks like.
Yeah.
And everybody throws a fit about it.
Right.
And whether or not they're too young, and I'm not even going to get into that topic. That's for a different episode. But
right.
They're throwing a fit that he's just showing them, and they're actually learning it, and no one cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of iffy to me, so we'll see if Crumb verifies this later on.
Yeah, I think I remember him saying something about it, but yeah, I guess we'll see later.
But yeah, he mentions that they just learn the dark arts, not just to defend against them, which is why he wants to go there.
Yeah.
And then Hermione gets back into character and gets fed up and just shuts the door. Hermione does that a lot with Draco. He annoys her, and then she just walks away, except for that one time in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yep, where she finally hauls off and punches him.
Yep. So she closes the door, and then she says that she wished he had gone to that school, and she gets all huffy, but she still doesn't say anything to him. She just kind of walks away and huffs. And then we get a little explanation from Hermione that there's a rivalry between the three schools in Europe. And those are Beauxbatons. Durmstrang and Hogwarts. They start talking as to where these schools are, and we don't get a lot of explanation about where the Beauxbatons students are from, but she does explain that the Durmstrang students must be somewhere north because they have gigantic fur cloaks along with their robes.
Oh, right.
They also mention that nobody knows where it is because there's enchantments around it that prevent people from knowing where Hogwarts is and Durmstrang is, so.
Right, just like Hogwarts, they have the same type of thing.
Right, so it's the same type of thing, she mentions that. Several students stop by the trio's compartment after that, and just to say hi, and I know Seamus stopped by, he didn't say much, that he was just excited about the Quidditch World Cup. And he was still all like, "Yay, Ireland!"
Of course.
Yeah. Neville stopped by, and he was kind of bummed that he didn't get to go because his grandmother wouldn't let him, which I thought that was odd. Mm. They're all talking about the World Cup like it wasn't attacked. Mm. They're just talking about it like it was like this great event, but something really bad happened there, and they're not even talking about that part.
True.
They're just talking about the sport. I thought that was kind of weird.
It is. But. That is weird.
And I'm and Val keeps saying how he wishes he could go, and I'm like, well, yeah, they're killing people, and well, they're not killing people, but they're torturing people. You really want to go to that?
Yeah. Well, they really only tortured those Muggles, but still.
Yeah. So then after that, Draco stops by, and Ron is excited, and he's talking about how he was in the top box, and he got the best tickets. You know, something that Ron doesn't get to brag about often.
Right.
And Draco has to come by and spoil it. And he says, yeah, that would be the first time and the last time in your life. Aww. You'll ever get seats like that. Draco spots Ron's lacy dress robes hanging out of his trunk. And he starts picking at him about that, too.
Oh, no.
So, and then all of a sudden, the scenery changes. And Malfoy asks if he's going to enter to win his family some money for new dress robes. Now, Ron has no idea what Malfoy is talking about. So obviously Malfoy knows what Mr. Weasley, Miss Weasley, Bill, Charlie, Percy, everybody's talking about it, but no one will tell him. So Ron has no idea what he's talking about, and Draco starts laughing at him because he doesn't know. His dad told him a long time ago.
And he would,
yeah, and he thought that with Ron having a brother and a father working at the ministry that he would know already, but he doesn't. And then he starts making fun of him because maybe his father wasn't important enough to be let into this gigantic secret.
Oh, jeez.
Which is not true. He does know. He's just playing by the rules.
Right.
So Ron gets really, really angry. This is, Ron has a huge temper. He slams the door and he breaks the glass in the compartment door. And as Draco's leaving. And then Hermione fixes it and comforts Ron and tells him not to listen to Draco. Typical.
Right.
So they arrive at Hogwarts and they all get off the train and it's pouring rain. They greet Hagrid and he's gathering the first years to take him across the lake. And then they climb into the carriage that's pulling by itself, but not really pulling by itself.
Oh, right.
As we find out later on. Yeah. They can't see the thestrals yet, but...
Right.
So the carriage is being pulled by itself. It's described in here. And that's where our chapter ends.
Ooh. Nice.
That brings us to chapter 12, which is the Triwizard Tournament, finally.
Right.
What everybody's been talking about, we'll know in this chapter, but not after a few more annoying interrupts. So... The students enter the Great Hall, and they're soaked from the rain, and they get interrupted by Peeves, who starts throwing water balloons at the students. Ron gets hit with one, and another one also nearly misses Hermione. And Professor McGonagall comes out and starts yelling at him, like, very angry. And she almost trips on the wet floor, and she, like, grabs onto Hermione. Stop herself from falling.
She would have broke a hip.
Yeah. Well, I'm laughing because I wish they put, this is one of the little things I would wish they would put in there. That would be really funny to watch.
Yeah. You know? That's true.
So McGonagall apologizes to Hermione and then they go into the Great Hall and they find their seats and they actually sit next to Nearly Headless Nick. And Harry also mentions, well, he thinks to himself that this is the first time he's ever seen a sorting besides his own. So he's kind of excited to see the sorting.
Oh.
Yeah, because in Chamber of Secrets, they were flying the car. And in Prisoner of Azkaban, they were doing something.
Right.
I don't remember what they were doing, why they couldn't see it.
I don't either. But they didn't see it.
Yeah, but they didn't. They obviously didn't see it because she mentions it here.
I remember why. Because they had to go off and didn't they have to go off and talk to Professor McGonagall about something? Like Hermione had to get her time turner or something.
Oh yeah, yeah, that is why.
And is Harry why. Had to. I don't remember what Harry had to talk to her about.
I don't remember either, but I do remember that. That is what happened, yeah.
Something like that.
So they're all finding their seats, and then Colin Creevy comes up to Harry and He's all annoying. I don't know how else to say it. He's like, guess what, Harry? Guess what? Guess what, Harry? Guess what, Harry? And Harry's like, what? And then he says that his brother is being sorted this year, and it's his brother's first year. And Colin hopes that he gets sorted into Gryffindor. Cool. And we get something interesting here. Harry asks, aren't brothers and sisters normally sorted into the same house? Because later on, we learn that Dennis is actually sorted into Gryffindor, and all the Weasleys are in Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But Hermione, yeah, most of the time it is true, but...
Not necessarily, because aren't the Patil sisters in different houses?
Right, and that's exactly what Hermione says, so we get a little insight there. Oh.
And they aren't in the movies, though. That's funny, because they put them in the same house in the movies.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. One in the books, one of them is a Ravenclaw and one of them is a Gryffindor. And they're actually, I think in the movies, they're paternal twins, but they're actually identical twins in the books. So, yeah. In the books, they're like Fred and George, they look identical, but in the movies, they're twins, but they are not identical twins. So that's kind of interesting too. And then everybody notices at the professor's table this gaping seat where the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher is, because everybody, of course, is wondering who's the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, but it's empty.
Right.
And Ron starts complaining that he's hungry, of course.
Of course.
Then Professor McGonagall, just as he says that, Professor McGonagall comes down with all the first years for them to get their sorting. And we get the, I'm not going to read it, but we get the Sorting Hat song, which delves a little bit into the houses and their characteristics, and I thought that was interesting to read.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it basically says that what we already know about the four houses.
Right.
Gryffindor is all brave and courageous. Ravenclaw is about the wit and intelligence. Hufflepuffs are hardworking, and Slytherins are ambitious, basically. But it's in a little song in poem form.
Right.
So then they see little Dennis Creevy, they describe him as being very, very small, coming up with all the first years, and he is dripping wet, and he is sporting Hagrid's massive cloak, or coat. And Colin is giving, or Dennis is giving Colin a thumbs up, and he's like, yeah, I fell in the lake, is what he vows. He's like excited that he fell in the lake. I didn't understand that, but apparently I just got the idea that these two are excited about everything.
Yeah, basically they are.
Yeah, so he fell in the lake, but he's super ecstatic that he fell in the lake. So McGonagall puts the sorting hat on the chair, and then we hear the song, and Harry mentions that it's not the same song that he got when he was sorted, and then Ron says that the Sorting Hat actually makes a new song every year.
Hmm.
So that is a little bit interesting. The sorting begins, and there's a whole bunch of nameless people that get sorted in the houses, of course. And then Dennis is sorted into Gryffindor, as everybody hoped. And then Dennis sits down next to Colin and retells the story about how he fell in the lake. He mentions that something pushed him back into the boat.
The giant squid, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. He says that something pushes him back into the boat. And Colin excitedly is like, Dennis, you see that guy with the black hair and the glasses? And he's all pointing Harry out to him like he's some sort of celebrity.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so they're just excitement galore.
Great.
I imagine them when I first read this as being so excited that they were constantly like shaking like a chihuahua.
That's probably a good description.
I don't know.
They're so like they're cute, but like especially like Colin when he was first introduced, like he's cute, but like he was so annoying.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a chihuahua. I mean, that's how I know they're adorable, but at the same time, like they have these really high pitched barking and.
I don't like chihuahuas. I don't think they're adorable.
Anyway. Well, to each his own, I guess.
Anyway.
So the sorting ends and they begin to eat. And Nick, nearly headless Nick, starts complaining about Peeves, saying that he wanted to come to the ceremony, but the professors wouldn't let him because he's a menace. He's throwing water balloons at the students, and this is where he mentions that he was terrorizing the house elves while they were preparing the meal.
Oh, no.
Yes, and Hermione gets all fed up that she's like, there's house elves at Hogwarts? Because apparently that's not mentioned in Hogwarts of History. God forbid.
That's really weird that she wouldn't have known that for some, you know, in all the books she reads. How could she have not come across that? Like, how do they not mention it in a book somewhere? And how has she not come across that?
Yeah, that's I thought that too. But apparently she didn't know. And she refuses to eat. She's very put off by her meal being prepared by slave labor, is what she calls it. Ron tries to persuade her to eat. And he's like, look, they have pudding and they have this. And I thought it was hilarious that one of the meal items is called Spotted Dick, which we actually, I had a giggle about that, and we actually looked it up, and it's some sort of pudding with dried fruit in it.
Usually currant.
Yeah, it's a British food that I've never heard of in my entire life, yeah. But now I want some.
Makes sense, then, I guess.
Yeah.
British food.
So, at the end of their meal, Dumbledore gets up to make an announcement. He says that the Inter-House Cup won't take place this year. And apparently, all the students and the Quidditch team members are outraged. And I was confused by this because the Inter-House Cup, I was under the impression that that meant, you know, the house points and all that. But apparently the Quidditch team is angry about it. So is that the Quidditch Cup or are they one and the same?
You know, I don't know. I think the Quidditch Cup is different than the House Cup, I thought. But I think whoever gets the Quidditch Cup, like, I think all those points count toward the House Cup, don't they?
Yeah, but I think so too.
But either way, if the House points aren't going on, I think it's assumed that Quidditch isn't going on because it counts toward House. Because it counts toward house points. I'm not sure.
I think you're right. That would make sense.
I'm not sure, though.
So, Dumbledore announces that it's not going to happen, and everybody's upset about it. They're not even letting him finish. But he's... Yeah. Yeah. All the Quidditch members, Fred and George and Harry, mostly, are talking about it. He says that the reason for this is that most of the teachers will... the teacher's time will be spent on another event that's taking place. Enter mysterious, something we don't know about.
Ooh.
And you think we're finally going to learn what everybody's been talking about since the beginning of the book. And then Professor Moody comes in and interrupts everybody. Yeah. We get a little description of Professor Moody. You know, he's kind of creepy looking with his googly eye and... Well, that's what I imagined it, you know,
yeah.
like if you're finger painting, they have those little googly eyes.
Yeah.
That you can put on. That's what I imagined it. But, so he's got his googly eye and he's got, I think it's a wooden leg or a metal leg.
Some type of like fake that. Leg.
Some type of prosthetic leg. And Harry's like, what happened? But nobody knows because it's mysterious again.
Right.
He walks right up to the professor's table and he shakes hands with Dumbledore and then he sits down to the empty Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And nobody actually mentions it yet, but it kind of clicks. And then he just starts eating sausages. and it also mentions the mysterious hip flask here too, that he's not drinking out of his cup that's at the table. He's drinking out of his hip flask.
Oh, right. He drinks out of his flask. That's the only thing he ever drinks out of, which
right. And that's important. That's the first time that he mentions that. And then Dumbledore introduces him as Professor Moody, so we finally learn who the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher is going to be for this year. And it's kind of funny to read because Dumbledore introduces him, and normally everybody claps. And here, only Dumbledore and Hagrid clap. And I imagined it being like the slow clap.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. That's funny. Or Moody. It's not even Moody anyway, so.
Yeah. So he gets the slow clap. So
I wonder at what point did we ever find out at what point Crouch kidnapped the real Moody? Does he say at the end?
I don't know, but I assumed that was what the ruckus was about in the previous chapter.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure if that's what it was or if it was sometime in between that. And, like, was that the real Moody that caused the false alarm, or was that the actual? Okay.
Yeah, I assumed that it was at that time as well.
Okay.
So, this is when Ron notices his wooden leg and fake eye, and no one knows what happened to him. And then finally, Dumbledore gets back to his announcement, and he announces, finally, that it's going to be the Triwizard Tournament that's going on, that's going to be eating up everybody's time.
Yay!
Yay, we finally know. Like, it wasn't dragged out long enough.
Right, no more secret.
No more secret. So then Dumbledore gives a little background. He says that the tournament started 700 years ago between the three rival schools in Europe. And here we have basically what Hermione had already said, too, that Beauxbatons, Hogwarts, and Durmstrang were rival schools. The tournament happens once every 5 years, and they rotate where it's being held. This year, for some reason, it's being held at Hogwarts. They said that a champion is selected from each of the schools to compete in magical tasks. They also mentioned that, we don't know how, but they mentioned that it's going to be chosen by an impartial judge. Which we find out later that that's the Goblet of Fire. They said that the reasoning for this event was that they thought it would be good to establish ties from all the schools and the different nationalities. And they had stopped it because the death toll was too high.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so apparently people are dying in this tournament.
So someone magically decided to reinstate it. Why now?
Yeah. Pretty much. So
we're getting overpopulated. We should reinstate this thing.
Pretty much, that's what they said. They said that it had been attempted to be reinstated for years, and it never got the push it needed. And then Ludo Bagman wanted to reinstate it, and it got it the push it needed. And he's going to be at the school, too, doing some stuff later on, so we find out.
It's fishy that it would happen this year.
Yeah, fishy. I'm assuming somehow, like, there's got to be a way that Mad-Eye, a.k.a. Barty Crouch Jr., is pulling the strings behind this.
Gotta be.
I don't know how. I haven't connected how yet.
Right.
But there's got to be he somehow.
I don't know. I mean, that's a pretty big thing to construct when, I mean, I'm sure there's a better, if he wanted to get into Voldemort or whatever he wanted to do, I'm sure there is another way he could have done it. I think he just saw this was happening and used it as, like, as a venue to do it.
Yeah, he saw the opportunity and snatched it up.
Yeah, because I think,
it would take a lot to.
Yeah.
Because he already has Barty Crouch Sr. under his control.
Right.
Somewhere along the way he will, or he does already.
Yeah.
But it would take a lot of convincing for everybody else, because he's not the only one to have his hands in this, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess you're probably right. He just saw this as an opportunity.
Probably, yeah. It would be a lot of work and stuff to do, and to make sure he even got through the tournament is enough work, besides even, you know, making sure the tournament got reinstated and
yeah,
making sure he won. There's got to be, there had to be another easier way. So he probably just saw it and just said
so maybe that's just a happy coincidence.
Probably.
So Dumbledore announces that the schools would be arriving in October and that there will be a 1,000 galleon reward for the winner. And then everybody gets excited and everybody wants to enter. Who cares about the death toll? 1,000 galleons are mine.
Right.
Yeah, Fred and George are the most excited to enter, actually. Which is, I think, cute. They have their, it's like they're jokesters, but they're businessmen. They're the businessmen, you know?
But they're underage, too, aren't they?
Yes, this is where Dumbledore mentions the age rule. This is new this year. Apparently before anybody could enter. This year, it says that only students 17 and up can enter. And then Fred and George are outraged. How could they do this to us? And they complain about it a little bit, and then they vow that they're going to find some way to enter this tournament. They're going to make it happen somehow, is basically what they say.
That's a lot of money. It's like 1,000 galleons is $9,750.
Yeah. Well, because I remember this because the trivia question we had on previous episodes, Arthur won the lottery and he only won 700 galleons and he took his entire family to Egypt on that. Yeah. And this is more than that, so.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. So they vow to enter and then everybody starts heading back to the common rooms after this announcement. And we get another little annoying thing here. Hermione notices that the common room is spotless. And she's huffs and puffs and slave labor under her breath is what she says.
I like how she just now notices, like, she never thought about this before. Like, who actually cleans, you know, the stuff? Who cooks? Who cleans the common rooms? Who does that kind of stuff? Like, she just now notices that it's house elves.
Right. Like, just now, like, all of a sudden she's outraged by it. She wasn't before, but...
Yeah, who did she think did it before?
I have no idea.
She never saw anybody do it before. Obviously, they do it overnight, so who does she think it is? It's obviously not janitors. There's no janitors, so obviously it's got to be some, you know, some kind of creature that does it that they have hired. Tell selves.
Yeah. So they all head to bed, and Ron, actually, as he's drifting off to sleep, is mumbling to Harry that if Fred and George figure out how to enter, that he was going to enter too. Which I think is completely ironic, because later on he's so mad at Harry because Harry figured out a way to do it.
Right, and supposedly didn't tell him.
Yeah, I think that's the real reason why he was mad, is because he thought that Harry figured it out and didn't tell anybody, so he could be the only underage person.
Right.
Or something weird like that.
Yeah, that's why he's mad.
And then Harry starts drifting off to sleep, and he's actually dreaming of... This is actually foreshadowing a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. He dreams of winning the tournament, and everybody, this crowd is cheering, and in the face of the crowd, he sees Cho Chang among the spectators. And we get Harry dreaming that he's famous again. Like, he's not already.
Right.
But. And that ends chapter 12.
Okay. Well, that brings us to chapter 13, which is Mad-Eye Moody. So, the next morning, I guess there was a storm, and it had blown over. And the trio took their new timetables and looked at them over breakfast, while the twins and Lee Jordan were discussing magical methods of aging themselves and ways of bluffing themselves into the tournament. Hermione was buttering some toast, and Ron actually points out that she's eating again. And she mentions that there's other ways of taking a stand for elf rights than not eating. Mail came, but there was no sign of Hedwig, and Harry had started to worry that maybe something had happened and Sirius hadn't even gotten his letter. He didn't have much time to worry, though, as it was time for herbology. This lesson consisted of squeezing pus from bubotubers. She mentions... Professor Sprout mentions that the pus is quite valuable, and that it's also a great remedy for acne.
I just... This is completely not related to the book, but I was watching Chamber of Secrets today, and it came to the part with the mandrakes, and my cat really doesn't like the sound of mandrakes. I just thought that was, she was just off the wall acting crazy. I just thought that was funny.
That is funny. Cats. Since you're not supposed to hear mandrakes without earmuffs on, yeah. Supposedly.
Yeah, cats and mandrakes don't mix. They don't mix.
That's funny. So next was Care of Magical Creatures with Hagrid, in which they were introduced to blast-ended Scroots. They were described as deformed, shell-less lobsters that were pale and slimy, with legs sticking out in very odd places, and no visible heads. Sparks flew out the end of them every so often, propelling them forward a few inches, and they smelled of rotting fish. So here's our introduction to blast-ended Scroots. Just a reminder of what they're supposed to look like.
I could never picture what they look like in my head.
I know, it's kind of rough, just something really ugly. And they never really, they don't mention them in the movies, do they? They leave them out, yeah, right? Yeah,
I wish they did mention them, because I couldn't picture them.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing that they left them out. It's probably too hard to even put together something that weird and ugly looking.
Yeah.
Apparently they had just hatched, and Hagrid thought they could make a project out of the class raising the Scroots themselves. They were just feeding them today, trying to figure out what they preferred. And Ron pointed out they didn't even seem to have mouths. One of its ends exploded on Dean Thomas, and he was burned. And a Gryffindor girl pointed out that it had a stinger.
I'm sorry. You said one of its ends exploded on Dean Thomas. Yeah. I pictured explosive stuff, some grossness, but the way you described it was hilarious.
It exploded on him and he got burned. And Hagrid was like, oh yeah, that can happen sometimes. And he just brushed it off.
Typical Hagrid, like, oh yeah,
right,
you might get burned a little bit, who cares.
Yeah, and then a Gryffindor girl points out a stinger, which seemed to be on the males. Hagrid said, and then that the females had suckers on their bellies to suck blood. And of course, Malfoy was being rude and sarcastic the whole time, and Hermione stands up for Hagrid, despite not liking the Scroots at all, saying that they, you know, despite, you know, being ugly and disgusting, that doesn't mean that they might not be valuable. And she made a reference to dragons, that they're mean and they breathe fire, but they have valuable blood. So, at lunch, Hermione started scarfing down her food so fast that the boys just stared at her and wondered if it was a new stand on elf rights. But of course, she just wanted to get to the library. Ron lectured her a bit, though, since it was only their first day back. But she just kept shoveling it in, and when she finished, she said, "See you at dinner," and ran off.
It's hilarious that they're like, "You're eating so fast," and chastising her, and she's just scarfing it down. And later on, she does the same thing to Ron, doesn't she? She's yeah. like, "You stop eating!"
Stop eating. Yep. Yeah. But, yeah, she just is going to the library. It's their first day back, and here she is scarfing down her food so she can go to the library. That afternoon, Harry and Ron had double divination. So Professor Trelawney pulled her usual spookiness and dreadful aura, and as she focused on Harry, immediately she told him, "I fear the thing you dread will indeed come to pass, and perhaps sooner than you think." Ron just rolled his eyes, but as she began her lesson about stargazing, Harry drifted off into thought. He became a bit uneasy at Trelawney's words at first. What if she was right? But no, he wasn't really dreading anything at the moment, unless you count Sirius getting caught. But she doesn't know anything. And Hermione was right, she's just an old fraud. But then again, she did make that prediction last term about Voldemort rising to power and his servant returning to him. That was real. Dumbledore himself had said he thought it was. Just then, Ron brought his attention back to class, who were all staring at him. Apparently, Trelawney was speaking to him about his planetary alignment, and he was nodding off. She predicted that he was born midwinter, and he proved her wrong by saying he was born in July. And everybody sniggered. She assigned them a ton of homework, probably for the antics in the classroom, and that Ron insists is going to take all weekend. When class is over, they make their way down to dinner, where they were met up with Hermione, who has no homework at all. While they were waiting in line to get into the Great Hall, Draco Malfoy and his cronies showed up to tell Ron that his dad was in the paper. He reads the article aloud, written by none other than Rita Skeeter, where she doesn't even get his dad's name right. The article refers to him as Arnold Weasley, and references the blunders from the World Cup, the flying car from a few years ago, and now this fresh new incident with the tussle with the Muggle law keepers, the Kleesmen, involving Mad-Eye Moody as well. Apparently the incident with the dustbins turned out to be a false alarm, of course, but several memories had to be modified in the end. The article included a picture which Malfoy referenced, and then commented that Ron's mother could do with losing a bit of weight. Harry tells Malfoy to get stuffed, and he replies with, "Oh yeah, that's right, you stayed with them before. Is Weasley's mother really that porky, or is it just the picture?"
That's just ridiculous. You don't insult somebody's mother like that.
No, and yeah, Harry has a perfect reply. As he holds Ron back, he says, "You know that expression your mom always makes, like she's got dung under her nose? Is it always like that, or is it just you're around?"
They're doing your mom jokes. It's classic.
I know.
It's classic children right there.
I know.
Oh, yeah, well, you're mother blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Malfoy turned pale and a little bit pink. Just as Harry turned around and started to walk away, Malfoy cast a spell at him that went white hot right by Harry's face. Before he could turn around and do something back, Professor Moody came limping up to them with his wand out, pointing right at a ferret that used to be Malfoy. He asked if he had gotten Harry, and he said no. As Goyle tried to pick up the ferret behind Moody's back, Moody yelled at him to leave it. This is where we find out his eye is magical, and he can see through the back of his head, and possibly even invisibility cloaks. We'll find out later.
That's ridiculous. Like, who made that eye? Like,
I have no idea. That's a really interesting question. I'd like to know. Like, I would really like to ask Joe that.
Yeah, I like to release that. I was listening to Potter Pensieve, and one of the Emily was having a fit because it's not just that he could see through invisibility cloaks. It's a deathly hallow. I can see through
true.
A deathly hallow, like, and that raised an interesting question with me, like. Who can make something that could render the Deathly Hallows useless like that? Who has that kind of power, you know?
That's true. That's a good question. Yeah, I would definitely like to get that answer from Joe.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. I don't even know if she meant to do that or what, but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
This sent Malfoy the ferret off running for the dungeons, but Moody stops him, saying he doesn't like people who attack when others' backs are turned. He's bouncing him around, and the ferret squeals in pain as he's slamming him against the ground, and he said never do that again. And it's actually quite violent, the way he's, like, slamming him on the ground. And McGonagall comes around and asks what he was doing, and he replied, teaching. And she figures out that it's a student, and she turned Malfoy back, telling Moody that, you know, they never ever use transfiguration as a punishment. Malfoy muttered something about my father, and Moody replied that his father was an old friend, and he should tell him that he'll be keeping an eye on his son. He also mentions that he'll be speaking to his head of house, which was Snape, who is also another old friend, who he's been meaning to have a word with anyway. Do you think any of this actually has to do with the real Moody, or maybe just Barty Jr.? Like, was the real Moody old friends with Snape and Lucius, or is it more plausible that Barty Jr. was?
I think it's more plausible that Barty Jr. is.
That's what I
but,
thought.
But, like, that like, doesn't that make sense why he would be picking on Draco.
Right.
Because, like, obviously, Like, it's a spat between children. Like, he's not doing it because he wants to save Harry Potter for Lord Voldemort. Like, it's a spat between children. I don't think it was going to go that far.
No, he just really, like, it just mentions that, like, he really didn't, like, really didn't like Draco, and that he despised what he did because he didn't like that he, you know, did that to Harry with his back turned.
I think that him befriending Harry and all, and attacking Draco, I think that's just to stay in character.
Yeah. Okay. Ron instructed Harry and Hermione not to talk to him for the next few minutes, as he wanted to fix that image in his memory forever. Hermione again wolfed down her food at dinner so she could get back to the library. When Ron confronted her about not having any homework, she said it wasn't schoolwork and took off. Fred and George Weasley came by for a moment to talk about how cool Moody is. The twins and Lee all said that his class was great and that they never had a lesson like it. They said he really knew what it was like to be out there fighting the dark arts. Unfortunately, Harry, Ron, and Hermione didn't have him until Thursday. And that is the end of my chapter. So now I wanted to go on to our Deathly Hallows 2 most anticipated moments. I just wanted to take a few minutes before we go and talk about some of the moments that we're most excited to see in Deathly Hallows 2, since it's our last show before the movie comes out. Since it was originally supposed to be the three of us, but since it's just the two of us, that'll have to do. What scenes are you most looking forward to, Melissa? I have a feeling we'll kind of have some of the same ones.
Yeah, well, my number one scene that I'm looking for is the Ron Hermione kiss, if you don't know by now.
Yeah.
Ron's my favorite, and I'm a big Ron and Hermione shipper. But so that one's obvious. But my close in second, actually, very close in second, is the scene between Bellatrix and Miss Weasley, the duel.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to see that as well.
Yeah, and it's, I loved, like, I was cheering when I read it in the book, you know? And
yeah. I think we've all been waiting for this scene to be able to see it in movie form, to really hear Molly Weasley say her famous line. I really can't wait for this moment. And we were all not really sure if it was really going to happen, if they were really going to have her say the full line, but now we know it's really going to happen. And definitely I'm looking forward to the Ron and Hermione kiss. I think everybody is. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be like a... It's not going to be played on too much. I think it's going to be kind of quick, but in kind of light. But I think it'll be great, just as well. I'm also really looking forward to, I have a couple more. I'm really looking forward to King's Cross, just because all of the answers that Harry and the audience need, really, from Dumbledore, they get. So it's kind of a good explanation point, and hopefully they'll do it well so that especially people, just movie fans, movie-only fans, if they have any, you know, unanswered questions, they'll be able to get those and tie up their loose ends as well. And we get to see Dumbledore again, which is great because he's one of my favorite characters. And I really just hope they do it justice because King's Cross is a really good scene in the book and is one of my favorites. So I'm looking forward to see that in the movie as well. Also, the epilogue, definitely. I'm interested to see how the trio will be portrayed grown up.
Yeah, that was spoiled for me. I didn't see, like, the video of it, but I saw pictures of it, and it's kind of cool.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it, so...
Yeah, I did see I did see pictures of how they're aged and stuff like that, and it's done well. Like,
that's good. I'm interested to see it.
Yeah. I don't know if they actually aged the characters, or if they got different actors altogether. I'm not sure upon that because I kind of looked at it and then I was like, okay, I kind of spoiled that one, but
yeah.
But yeah,
I haven't spoiled it yet then.
Yeah. It's done well. I think it does justice. I don't think I've seen everybody. I saw Ginny and Harry and I saw Draco, I think. I didn't see everybody.
Okay, I'll probably end up getting, for all the news that I post, I'll probably end up getting spoiled by the time before the movie comes, which is a bummer, but hopefully not.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in the debut of the actors that play the kids, too, so to see who they pick to... But we'll actually see who they pick to have the kids, I think, because they'll be at LeakyCon as well.
Yeah.
And then also I have on my list the resurrection scene, just because it's going to be really super emotional, not only because Harry realizes that he's going to have to die, but that he gets to recall his loved ones that have passed to support him and be with him when he has to make his move. So those characters come back, and I think it's going to be a really great scene, and hopefully they do that well.
Yeah, I forgot about that scene. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that scene now.
Yeah, it's good. Those are the top ones. I mean, I'm really looking forward to everything. There's so many more, but those are just
some
in particular.
One of my top ones that I'm looking for is Snape's last words.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not only just, like, the whole backstory being explained and all that, and we get to see this whole sub-story being played out, but, like... I feel like his last words were, "Look at me."
Yes.
And I feel like that was a play on Harry having Lily's eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that Alan Rickman is a great, he's one of the best actors in the series. I don't necessarily, Snape's not necessarily my favorite character, but he definitely, he's a very, very good actor. And I really want to see how he plays that out because I know he's going to be great at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I even heard that one of the people on set, part of the crew, I can't remember who, but they actually cried during his performance when they were filming it. So it's definitely going to be good. I know that.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited to see that as well.
Yeah.
In particular, I'm really just hoping that they get everything right since it's their last shot. You know, however, after watching that interview with J.K. Rowling and hearing her approval of part two, I do feel a lot better going into it, knowing they did a good enough job to please her. After all, she's the one who wrote it and created this whole world, you know? So right. If she's okay with it, we should be too.
Yeah, well, she's had her hand in the movies from the beginning, but I feel like there's a lot left out in the movies, but like with Deathly Hallows, I don't feel that way. Like almost every single scene that I was looking for in Deathly Hallows Part 1 was there. And they covered all the moments that I was looking for, and because they filmed them around the same time and split it up into two movies so that they could get everything in, I'm pretty sure that they're going to get all the high points that everybody's waiting for, you know?
Right. Yeah. So those are my moments. Did you have any more?
I think that about covers it. There's a few things that I'm excited to see, but nothing that big. Those were my big ones.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Potter's trivia. Last week's trivia winner backed out at the last moment and said she couldn't participate. So, we won't mention her. And then I didn't post the trivia question on the Facebook group since I didn't have power, and it was for a couple days, and I was working, and it was the 4th of July and all that. So since no one got to answer that question, we're just going to post it on the Facebook on Monday for real this time, just in case you don't remember. The question was, what is the spell or charm to return a stunned person back to normal? Is it A, energize, B, normalize, C, refreshize, or D, enervate? So I'll go ahead and post that on Monday, probably around noon or so. And you can go ahead and answer that. And then let's go over some contact information. You can visit our website at specialisrevealio.com for tons of news, blog posts, podcast updates, and links to all of our social media. Friend us on Facebook under specialisrevealio. And join our podcast group at Potter Special Trivialio Podcast for other news links, group chat, and trivia announcements. Follow us on Twitter at Revealio Podcast. Visit us on Podomatic at PotterSpecialsRevealio.podomatic.com to download new and old episodes. Subscribe to us using iTunes and drop us a rating and leave a comment. Please send us any questions, comments, or input to Christine at specialistrevelio.com or Samantha at specialistrevelio.com. That's it for episode 21. Next week, you'll be hearing from us from Orlando, Florida.
Yay!
For our Deathly Hallows review episode. So, yeah, that's it. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.